Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast. It's episode 104, and we're a couple weeks out from the season, so it's time to read some names. Now it's time to look at the pitching. What is the pitching going to do for the Seattle Mariners in 2025? I will be examining the position player group as well heading into the season, but this is the pitching preview. I'll give my optimistic view on the pitching staff, maybe a more pessimistic view on the crop of pitchers they have, and really the narrative going into this season for this team is, can the pitching just be good enough to support this elite offense that the Seattle Mariners have put together? Wait, hold on. Okay, no, it says in my notes the opposite. Now, obviously, as you know, the concerns of this team aren't the pitching staff going into the year. They shouldn't be. And a lot of this preview is just going to be looking forward to seeing a lot of these guys pitch again. But there are some concerns. It's not, you know, all roses here on the pitching preview episode. All right. I'm definitely going to have some more criticisms of the team as a whole with the position player preview, but I got some things to say about the pitching, as you might expect. But let's just jump into it. I don't want to waste time. There's a lot of players to talk about. But overall, let's just start with the rotation. I do have a large concern about the rotation. My biggest concern, and I had this concern before the Kirby injury news, which doesn't seem that bad. We'll chat about that. Was the depth, was the starting pitching depth. Not really worried about the bullpen depth as a whole. Talked a lot about how I'm pretty confident that this team can just have good bullpen pitchers available most of the time, especially through AAA or, you know, waivers and making interesting trades for pitchers. Not concerned about the bullpen pitching depth, the starting pitching depth. Is it a concern? Excuse me. Now, you could say that about every team in Major League Baseball. I think in this modern era of baseball that we are in, you really can't have too many pitchers on your 40-man, or even just two. You can't have too many, like, solid starting pitching prospects that you would trust as a depth piece going into a season that you want to win, that you want to contend, which this team does. I think the Dodgers are a team that's pushing how many pitchers you need to the limit. They have a healthy rotation, and they have a rotation all on the injured list. And that is, you know, that's not a bad thing. It's definitely a little bit of a headache when all those guys get off the IL, but it's not a bad thing. The Mariners pitching staff has been so durable. These starters have been incredibly durable, especially looking at just the average, like, amount of starting pitching injuries that most teams have had in the past, I don't know, half decade. This rotation has been remarkably healthy. It's been a big strength of this team. And going into this season, it's not too dissimilar to last year in terms of pitching depth, and concerns about the pitching depth are probably similar. But another year has passed. These pitchers are older. They have now logged way more innings than they did going into last season. And I'm still concerned about the pitching depth, because nothing is a given in baseball, especially pitching health. And the depth right now is Emerson Hancock, who looks like he will be the fifth guy in the rotation to start the year, with Kirby on the IL and out for, doesn't seem like super long, but we'll definitely be seeing Emerson Hancock in the fifth game of the season for sure. And I'll talk about him a little bit more in depth later. After him, is it Jonathan Diaz? Is it Logan Evans? Brandon Garcia, perhaps? Really in the low minors, the lower minors than Logan Evans? I'm not too interested in Jonathan Diaz in 2025, if I'm being quite honest with you. I don't have a huge issue with Emerson Hancock being the main sixth guy. on like first glance, looking at his numbers, he looks like he kind of stinks, but I don't think he's that bad, and I think he's perfectly serviceable as a fifth guy. And there's, I guess, quality pitching depth is more my concern, because there's starters that have been in the system for a while that could potentially fill in here and there for a spot start. Like Jonathan Diaz is on there. I just don't know at this point. Casey Lawrence is probably going to be in AAA. They signed other Luis F. Castillo, who will be in the minors. Like Taylor Dollard is a guy who's been in the org for what seems like a decade now. I don't think that's true, but he's probably on the list. He'll probably pitch in AAA this season. Like Reed Van Scooter, as I call him, but I think it's Van Scotter. I've talked about him in some of my minor league episodes. He's a lefty, has been good in A ball and high A recently. Probably will be double A, triple A guy this year. Like Brandon Garcia, I mentioned, who I think is super interesting, potentially more as a bullpen piece than a starter, but he's also really young still. Like they have, that's who they have as the depth. And it could totally be better. You know, the staff has been so healthy. Like Kirby, Logan, Castillo, Bryce have thrown a lot of very solid, very healthy innings past couple years, past couple seasons. That is something I do worry about. I mean, the pitching staff is the biggest strength of this team. Part of the appeal of said strength is the durability that we've seen. It's not just the rate stats. It's not the per inning production, which is also very good. It is the combination with that and the durability, I think, is why I have said maybe on a per inning basis, this isn't the best pitching staff in baseball. But I think when you look at how many innings and just volume that these guys have pitched, especially last season, I think they are the best staff in baseball because of that. Like, we're not seeing that anymore in baseball. I mean, the innings are not as quite as, you know, the ceiling of the amount of innings guys are throwing now is less. Like, Logan led the league with 208 innings. But it's just, they had, what? They had Logan, 208 and two-thirds. George, 191. Luis Castillo, 175. Bryce Miller, 180. And like Brian Wu, 121 weird-ish innings. It's a lot. It's a lot of innings in minor baseball. And these guys throw a lot of pitches. They throw really hard. Like Brian Wu has had surgery before. But guys like Logan Gilbert and George Kirby, who have been the two in this org for the longest time of these pitchers and have thrown so many innings across college, the minors, and now Major League Baseball, they're just getting into arbitration. It's always a risk going into the season, and you can't help but it be a risk. I mean, it's just pitching injuries. You can't really avoid them. There's also the conversation that, like, I'm confident, you know, some of this health is just straight up luck. I think all injuries are a good portion luck, but I think the org has probably found something helpful to keep these guys as healthy as they have been. I don't think it's a fluke that they've been as durable and as good as they've been. So I think it's probably some luck, but probably I think there's, you know, they're doing something to help these guys stay healthy, because it's just rare. Every team, like even the teams with the great rotations that rival the Mariners, will have injuries, and all of them, like I said, probably could have better depth like the Mariners, but the other teams with great rotations also, on paper, have a more reliable offense than the Mariners. Maybe the ceiling is, or I'd say floor-wise, yeah, those teams like the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Braves have a great pitching staff, potentially with Strider back going into this season. Like even the Yankees without Cole probably still project to have a good starting rotation, a little less so with Cole now, but like these really, really great teams have, I'd say, more reliable offenses to lean on. Like the Mariners are probably the most reliant team on the production and health of their starting rotation to carry them through the season. They're still really young. Luis Castillo isn't really that old in the grand scheme. He's like, what, 32? I think he turns 33 this season. He's like, that's not that old. Pitching injuries, they're just scary. I think the fact that these guys have just logged so many miles in recent years also make me think they're more likely to get hurt. I don't know. Is that too doom and gloom to like see the awesome volume they've accrued in recent years and think that that makes them a lot more likely to miss time this season? Might be too doomer of me, but I don't know. Like, they weathered the Brian Woo storm last season pretty well. Like, it wasn't the pitching wasn't the issue of why they weren't winning those games when he was pitching, when he was either both out and they had to get creative, right? Like, his low inning tally is a little misleading because, like, 121 innings is more than half of a season now, but you'd expect he missed 2 to 3 months ish of straight IL time. But no. His low inning tally was not missing a large swath of the season. They just limited his pitch count a ton and leaned really heavily on the bullpen in those games instead of just completely sit him and have Hancock start a lot. So Hancock didn't actually get a lot of starts when they could have rested Brian Woo, but they had him go out there and he was pitching consistently like 70 pitches and going as deep as he could, which he was still getting pretty damn deep in the games. It was really impressive, but they weathered that storm. But what if, like, George is going to start the year hurt? What if there's just more injuries? We'll have to see a lot more Hancock, a lot more interesting handling with how they manage the bullpen. I don't know. I think this year will be a real test of the pitching development and, like, coaching. Can they keep the staff healthy again if there are long absences? What do they have with Hancock? And more intriguingly, Logan Evans. I think we're going to see him this year, maybe just out of necessity. And we'll definitely see Hancock for sure, as I mentioned. So I will now, I'll talk about these guys a little bit individually. I mean, we know the starting pitchers on this team. I'm going to start with the couple guys, especially the first guy. I don't have a whole lot to really talk about. I mean, it's Logan Gilbert. What else is there to say about the stallion, the Clydesdale of this pitching staff? I mean, as I mentioned, led the league in innings last year, 208 and two-thirds, with a 3.23 ERA. Just an absolute workhorse. Got plenty of Cy Young votes. Is poised to just keep chugging along. It just feels like he's gotten slowly but surely better with every season that he's pitched in Mariners uniform. I think nationally, I think Mariners fans know this about him, but I think nationally, his ability to limit base runners and like free base runners in walks is underrated because of how stupidly elite George Kirby is at not walking guys. Like, Logan Gilbert had a 4.6% walk rate last year. If it wasn't for George's 3%, that would look insane. Like, it should still look insane. He had a 0.89 whip, which is less than Kirby's by a decent margin. He just kind of does everything right. I mean, he has evolved his pitch mix now to still lean pretty heavily on that fastball, but he's added in that really interesting cutter. He's got that fun gyro slider that basically all the other starting pitchers on this team have. He has his more traditional curveball that he doesn't throw quite as much. The cutter is really interesting. The splitter gives a completely different look. And he leaned heavy on the slider last year. His fastball percentage, I talked about it in my end of year pod, his fastball percentage has slowly been going down, as it's one to do usually when a young guy comes up with a great fastball. They lean on it heavy and then slowly phase it out for other pitchers, but still throw it a lot. Last year, he threw the slider 1% more, 32%, and his four-seamer, 31%. And slider was a really damn good pitch. Those two were phenomenal. Combined with his splitter and the curveball, this isn't particularly elite in the way it is shaped, but it's just the more traditional curveball. This gives you a different look, works really well off of his fastball, the way it comes off of his hand. What else can he do at this point? He limited hard contact the best he has in his career last season, his career best in strikeout percentage, his career lowest in maximum exit velocity, his average exit velocity. He gave up just about the same amount of barrel percentage as he gave up in 2022, which is a really good number, right around league average. Again, what has he got to do? You know? He could theoretically get better. But even if this is just Logan Gilbert's floor, is just a guy who can work consistently deep into games. I mean, he had 20 quality starts and 33 outings. Worked consistently in the games. Really, really good at limiting base runners. So you can kind of plug and play him at any ballpark and he's going to succeed. He's not completely reliant on the marine layer. He's not completely reliant on ground balls and the defense in his infield to get those outs. He gets a lot of whiffs. He sits almost 97 still on his fastball. The peripheral numbers were basically the same as his ERA last year. Like, there was nothing cheap about his 3.23 ERA. There's not a whole lot else to say about Logan Gilbert besides his win-loss percentage. It was nine. He had 9 wins to 12 losses. Come on, dude. What are you losing 12 games for? Just simply win more games than that. That's why I wouldn't have voted him for Cy Young at all. Not even in the top 10. 12 losses to 9 wins. Come on. Who are you? Felix Hernandez. We know that guy hated winning ball games too. No, I don't even want to talk about Logan a whole lot else. Like, you could really dive into the minutia of his numbers, but I'm not going to. He's just an awesome pitcher, and this seems to be his floor. It's just a really, really good pitcher in any ballpark, any situation. And the one thing he's consistently done is just his extension. Like, he releases the ball. It's been elite since he's come up. Extension is just how far down the mound you release it. So he's lanky, and his delivery really aligns with the ball just getting there fast. He throws it hard and it comes off the mound closer than almost every other pitcher in the league. And as a starter, that is super, super useful. So yeah, that's Logan Gilbert. Walter, what a man. Next pitcher, George Kirby. George Kirby. Now, starting the season, hurt shoulder problem, which is, alarm bells are not quite ringing if it was like what Brian Wu had last season to start the year, like forearm-ish, elbowy type stuff, I'd be a lot more concerned. Justin Hollander, which, must I say, Jerry DePoto should never speak to the media again. It should be only Justin Hollander. He's much better at it. He did not seem concerned, like, in the slightest about George Kirby's injury. I think this is just a lot, definitely more precautionary than anything. I mean, if they have any hopes of contending, they need George Kirby healthy in September and October. So, obviously, you're going to slow play him a little bit if you think there's any chance of a more significant injury with his shoulder. Shoulders, I think, are fairly important to throw in a baseball. So, it doesn't sound super bad. Obviously, if there's updates, there will be updates, but right now we're going to operate like he's probably going to throw and be healthy most of the year, knock on wood. Last season was a very interesting year for George. 191 innings, that's just full season, made the same amount of starts as Logan, super consistent, actually had more quality starts than Logan, most on the team with 22, two more than Logan did. And the concerns about him that I talked about at the start of the season manifested themselves a little bit during the season. He still ends up with a 3.53 ERA. 104 ERA plus isn't amazing just because it's park adjusted and he pitches in Seattle half the time. But that's still a really good ERA with that many innings pitched. His peripherals were right around there. So nothing, like, his FIP was lower by about 0.3 points, and that's just going to be what it is. You look at his Fangraphs WAR versus Baseball Reference WAR, which I talked about a lot. It was 4.2 Fangraphs to 1.9 Baseball Reference. That just means that FIP likes him a lot more than So runs allowed per nine is what goes into baseball reference WAR for pitchers. And FIP is just home run, really just factors in home runs, strikeouts, and walks. And George not walking anyone ever and really doesn't give up a whole lot of hard contact. Yeah, like he's just a FIP darling. But I had concerns. He lives almost two in the zone. I've talked about this before. And if you look at his game logs from last season, he had those two outings that just atrocious outings. The second outing of the year, the one against Cleveland, where he gave up eight runs, all of them earned in 3.2 innings pitched. That team exceptionally good at contact, and George lives on the fringes of the zone, but with a team like that, that is so good at hitting, I think he wasn't getting a lot of swing and miss, and there was a lot of contact, and the ball was going all over the yard and just snowballed. And then he had the other atrocious outing, the worst outing he's had in his career, against the Tigers in Detroit, which is tough ballpark for giving up contact. It is a huge ballpark. 3.2 innings, 11 runs, six of them earned. Some, you know, a little unlucky there, but he had those two, like, those two outings happened. So it's not like you can put that asterisk on there and vote him for Cy Young. It's like, oh, without those two outings, he would have had a 3.01 ERA. No, those outings happen, but if you do take those outings out, his body of work was amazing last season. And the only thing that I think he can improve on going into this year, and I talked about that mid-season last year, is just living outside the zone a little bit more. He's not a guy who gets a lot of whiffs. Like, again, he gets a lot of soft contact. He lives in the shadow of the zone, which is just the edges outside and inside of the zone. His stuff is really good, and his stuff is good enough to get more swings and misses outside of the zone. I think that's the only thing he can really improve on here, is trying to get more whiffs. And if that comes at the expense of more walks, his walk rate was 3%. Like, he can afford to give up a couple more walks. And like, the stats show that pitchers who have a low walk rate are way more likely to get good results, even if they walk more guys than usual. That's just how it works. Like, if you are a guy with really good command and a really low walk rate on average, you can afford to give up a lot more walks than other people because you have the skill to back it up. Or you're, you know, if he's in a jam, he can just dot up the edges of the zone really well. And talk about a guy who, if the challenge system is ever implemented fully, talk about a guy who would cook in the challenge system. But I think that's the only thing with George, is just, yeah, it's just living a little bit more outside of the zone, I think. Otherwise, he could repeat the same year that he had last season, get a little bit more lucky, and end up with like a 2.9 ERA with a 3.2 FIP and win the Cy Young with like 200 innings. Well, I don't know about that with the injury, but that's just what he could just get a little bit luckier this season, and his outcomes would be drastically different. And he's not a particularly like ground ball heavy guy either. Like, Logan gets the most ground balls out of any starter on this team. Not tremendously reliant on it, but it's the fact that Kirby, he gets more fly balls, but also he just gets hit more. There's just more volume of batted balls because he doesn't get as many whiffs or as many strikeouts. So how he could become truly, truly, truly elite is the whiff strikeout numbers going up, which means putting those pitches a little bit more outside of the zone. You know all I'm saying? But his pitch mix is really good. His stuff is still elite, really good. And the combination of his stuff and velocity and everything with the command is still a unicorn makeup of a pitcher. So like, his, you hear guys talk about him, and it's almost disrespect to talk about him in the way that people do when Logan Gilbert is in this rotation as well, who's just been better than him. George just has the ceiling of best pitcher in baseball because of those tools. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to reach it, but he has that ability. And now let's move on to Luis Castillo, the elder statesman of this team. Luis Castillo had a very Luis Castillo-y kind of year last year, honestly. 175 innings. I know he dealt with a little bit of injury. I think it was shoulder in spring training last season. And then he also had a hamstring injury. He basically missed. I think he missed all of September. That didn't help. But 175 innings, still logged plenty of innings. I talked about this at the end of the season. It's not rocket science. If there is anyone to be concerned about in this rotation, it is Luis Castillo. And it's simple. Age. Age is the reason. I'm not ringing the panic bells. You know, there's not an army at the gates knocking down Luis Castillo's Mariners career in crumbling fashion. It's more kind of like a dying empire. United States. So I still think he's a really effective pitcher. He was still an effective pitcher last season, like 3.64 ERA, again, park adjusted, 101 ERA plus, doesn't look great, but he still leaned on the thing that has been successful for him the entire time in Seattle. It's the fastball and it's the slider. His erratic command, dare I say, effectively wildness, is still a big strength for him. His arm angle as well, just the way he throws his fastball, I think is just such a big strength, the way it comes off his hand. He can still throw it really hard, don't get me wrong, and it's still a really good pitch. It still is the pitch he gets the most strikeouts on. That and the slider are neck and neck, but it's pretty tremendous that that happens. Because just, he can, when he's not locating it, again, it can still be such a good pitch no matter the day. It's the changeup and the sinker that have just not been great, honestly. Changeup and sinker both don't really get a lot of strikeouts. Guys, I think he just puts them too much in the zone, or either they're just non-competitive and run completely out of the zone. And then the biggest concern here is fastball velocity is my concern. His arm angle also, interesting, the lowest it's ever been in his career last season by 3 degrees, which is fairly significant with arm angles. But his fastball velocity is slowly fading as he ages. And maybe it's a mechanical thing that could change it. Maybe it literally is just his body aging and he can't throw as hard. Like, I think it's an Occam's razor situation. The likeliest outcome is probably the outcome. And that's probably what it is. He doesn't get good extension. He's like the opposite of Logan Gilbert. He releases the ball very far away from the plate. So that perceived velocity is lower than you'd think as well. And I think you can see kind of the velocity in the numbers. I'm going to read you the changes in velocity, but then throw out a couple numbers why you might also just make this inference by looking at some of his numbers. His velocity in 2021, he sat 97.2 on his fastball. That's pretty elite for a starter. 2022, 97. 2023, 96.1. And then last season, 95.6. So that is since 2021, he's lost 0.2 miles per hour, 0.2 miles per hour, 0.9 miles per hour, and 0.7 miles per hour off of his four-seam fastball. And that is the fastball that gets him paid. That is the fastball that gets him outs and strikes. That is his go pitch. That is the pitch that if that's not working, again, it could still kind of work sometimes, but it's never a guarantee. If he's locating his fastball, ooh. God, because it works so nice off a slider. But you can see it in a stat called zone contact percentage. And guys made a lot more contact on pitches he put in the zone this year. I think it is literally because his fastball is just a little easier to hit. And if his fastball is a little easier to hit, the other pitches aren't quite as worrisome at the plate. He got less whiffs than he ever has in his career last season. What was also really interesting about the batted balls he gave up was that he gave up the most pulled fly balls in his career. That's not true. Second most to 2022. But still, it ticked up. It ticked up last season, the pulled fly balls. I think guys are getting around a little bit more on his pitchers right now. Again, still an effective pitcher. I still think he's going to be a valuable asset to the team. I think there's something to mixing up looks as well, where Logan, like all these guys are right-handed pitching. As you know, there's no lefties in this rotation. But Luis gives a very different arm angle. So him just slapped in the middle of this rotation where Bryce Miller and Logan Gilbert are a little bit more vertical and upright. George is kind of a traditional guy. He's tall, but it's still more of a traditional arm angle. And then Brian Wu is also a little traditional, but he's shorter. And it's veering a little bit lower than George Kirby. And Luis Castillo is almost just a full-on sidearm pitcher. And so I think in the context of this rotation, what Luis Castillo does is different enough from an arsenal and arm angle perspective that I think adds to his value. I think that's something interesting that Bryce Miller said in spring, where he's working on his curveball. Logan is also like tweaking his curveball potentially, or at least he's working on it. Doesn't mean he's going to throw it like that in the season, but Bryce was talking about how it looked more like kind of the knuckle curve that Bryce adopted last season. He was saying, well, we shouldn't pitch back-to-back in the rotation because guys will recognize that from day to day and see that as a kind of a very similar pitch. And I thought that was super interesting. And I was like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So I think when you see Luis Castillo a day after you see George Kirby, it's a completely different experience. And I think that adds to something. So if the rotation ends up being like Logan Gilbert 1, George 2, when George comes back, Luis Castillo 3, I think that is, and then Bryce Miller 4, that is right-handed pitchers giving you quite different looks each day. And I think that's worth something. So, and plus, I love when Luis Castillo cooks. I think out of any pitcher the past couple years on this team, when he's absolutely flamethrowing and cooking guys in the box, Luis Castillo is the most fun to watch because of his rock celebration that he does, the way he comes off the mound, and just when he's just hurling that fastball in there, sidearm style, it's just very satisfying to watch. So we'll see what he does. I'm going to be very interested to see where the fastball velocity is this year. And then he also hasn't really made any significant changes to his arsenal or his pitch mix the past couple of seasons. So I'm interested to see as he gets older, as he loses a little bit of effectiveness and velocity off of his fastball, does he, I don't think he'll add a completely new pitch right now, but does he switch things up a little bit and how often he uses his changeup again, or does he just throw the slider more? I don't know. We'll see. But the next pitcher on the list, as we try to finish the starters in under 45 minutes, which we'll see, this is going to be a long one. Excuse that. I knocked something off of my desk. Bryce Miller might be my favorite pitcher on the Mariners right now, I think. Apart from his personality, which is fun and has been exhibited a lot recently towards the end of last season and spring training on the Mariners socials, he'll probably roll out 7 pitches a game on average this season as he was doing late last year. And I love pitchers like that. The fact that he can do it too and keep adding these pitches that are effective is insane. It's very cool that he's doing that. He also, like the rest of his pitching staff, he throws a lot of strikes. He has an elite fastball. That fastball is awesome. He's still going to lean on it a lot as he's done since he's come up, and he should. The fastball is just, it is so elite in the shape of it. Not particularly elite velocity wise. He sits, what, 95, which is still very, that's good for a starter, but it's just how it looks to hitters. It just rises straight through the zone. It is amazing. Gets a lot of strikes, gets a lot of whiffs on his four-seam fastball, which is cool. Really what took his game to the next level was adding that splitter, as well as splitter's awesome. You know, I'm seeing a lot of Roki Sasaki talk about his splitter on my timeline recently, and for a good reason. His splitter looks pretty awesome. Everyone is saying how much of a unicorn pitch it is, and oh, it moves to both sides. It's not just an arm side movement splitter straight down. It moves to both sides. Yeah, you know who else does that and has did that in Major League Baseball? Bryce Miller. Bryce Miller did that last season. His splitter occasionally would move to the glove side. So I want to see more people talking about that. Nah, Roki Sasaki looks pretty, actually very, very disgusting. But Bryce Miller's is great. Lots of whiffs. Really interesting pitch that works great with his fastball. Has that sinker that's effective. And then his sweeper slider were good. And then talked about this at the end of last season. He added that knuckle curve in late June. And then he was one of the best five starting pitchers in baseball from July till the end of the season after that addition of the knuckle curve. And it's not even a particularly elite pitch in vacuum. His knuckle curve is like fine. The shape on it, everything, it's a good curveball. But just the fact that he has now three breaking balls, all that look a little different with an elite fastball and a great splitter. And then the cutter for lefties occasionally that he just pops right out there. It gives him this nasty seven-pitch mix that I'm just so excited to watch all season. And I mean, I'm sure it'll evolve. Again, it just keeps evolving. He keeps doing the damn thing every season. Really low batting average on balls in play last year. Like, did not give up a ton of hard contact. I think he could stand to get more whiffs in general on his pitches, on his breaking balls in particular. But that's kind of nitpicky, really. The best thing he has is that fastball. If things aren't going great, he has the fastball, and that thing is so damn good. So I'm looking forward to his season. Did not allow a ton of base runners last year. Ended up with a 2.94 ERA, which is so good. Even park adjusted ERA plus 125, great. And then his FIP was 3.58. His Sierra was 3.8, which I love Sierra. I'm a big Sierra guy. So, I mean, he got a little lucky from July on. Like, his ERA was like 1.5, and his FIP was probably like 3. So, again, he got a little lucky, I'll admit. But that's still phenomenal production from a guy entering year 3. This is just year 3 for Bryce. So, this is tremendous. And I'm really looking forward to watching every single pitch he throws. I didn't mention with Kirby. Kirby should throw his knuckleball more than he did last year. And then I think Bryce should just learn a knuckleball. Screw it. Why not? Mix the knuckleball in there. Or go the old Zach Greinke route and occasionally throw the Ephus. Guys would not expect him if he threw an Ephus occasionally. So what if he did that? That'd be fun. And the last guy we saw last year, who's still in the rotation, just tremendously talented, maybe the biggest ceiling on this pitching staff. I still think it's George, but Brian Wu is so good on a rate basis, per inning basis last season. Brian Wu was one of the best pitchers in baseball. That's not negotiable. He just was. He just only threw 121 innings. I love Brian Wu. for a good amount of reasons. Obviously, you don't need to know anything about baseball to just watch him and be like, yeah, that guy looks pretty good at pitching. Those hitters, they're swinging and missing a lot. Oh, they're not getting a whole lot of runs off that guy. Yeah. Yeah. He's just damn good. Also, fellow Gen Z King, born in 2000, my dog, love that. You can't talk about last season without the perpetual doom we felt with every single injury update. It was like forearm tightness, elbow pain, forearm tightness. He'd pitch somehow 6 innings, throwing 70 pitches, and then get pulled. And that went on for a long time until he finally settled in. And then, boy, was he just really good. Was he just really good after he was allowed to pitch more than he did. His fastball, also like Bryce Miller's, is elite for different reasons. It just, the shape on it is unique. It comes at you low and rises through the zone as well. But with his arm angle, is a little bit more 3/4, like it's 27 degrees. And the way it just comes into the zone, it's just really hard for hitters to figure it out. And he has really good command on it. I think the next step for him, he has a sinker, he's got the sweeper, occasional changeup. It looks like he's working on a cutter. I think the cutter would be perfect for his arsenal to attack lefties with. He has the same kind of gyro slider as most of the other starters on this team. Slider that just, it dips a lot more vertically than horizontally. I think that can be a really good pitch. I think he's going to need that slider to be good. I think he's going to need to locate the sinker really well this year, which he did last year. Keep doing that. But otherwise, again, he can just lean on his fastball, and he doesn't necessarily need to have amazing pitches. His fastball is awesome. But I'm excited if he starts whipping out the cutter this season. Similar to the rest of the guys in this staff, he attacks hitters early and often with strikes, fastballs in the zone, has good stuff on his other pitches, but he only had a 2.8% walk rate last year in his 121 pitches. That is 0.2% less than George Kirby. I don't know if he has quite his elite command, but he is not afraid to just throw his fastball in the zone and say, hey, try to hit it. Bet you can't. And you know what? Most of the time, guys just straight up can't hit it. So I commend him for it. And yeah, I don't want to focus too much on other stuff. I got more pitchers to talk about, but just what a pitcher that they got. And they took a chance. He was hurt coming out of college, and he comes in, and he's one of the best young pitchers in ball. And I'm just, God, the sky's the limit with him. If we can just see, like, the real improvement from last season is, you know, maybe getting more whiff on his breaking pitches and then throwing a full season. Like, throwing 170-plus innings and being healthy all year. That's really what he can improve on. Like, he could stand to strike out guys more, but I think part of his strength is going to be the fact that his pitches are so good, his fastball is so good, that he's going to get a lot of soft contact, and I think he's a good candidate for leading this team in complete games by the end of the season. Like, we saw it last year when he was hurt, I mentioned it. His pitch count looked like they were holding it around 60 to 75 pitches every week. But he'd go into the 5th, 6th, 7th inning with 60 pitches. It was insane. If he wasn't hurt, he could have had 7 to 10 complete games last year. So we'll see. I think he's a good candidate for leading the team in complete games. We'll watch out for that. But I don't want to... I got to move on. I love all 5 of those guys. I'm really looking forward to it again. Biggest thing is the depth. And why? Well, Emerson Hancock. Let's chat about Emerson Hancock for a second. As I said earlier, probably... I don't know if he's good. I'll be honest. I don't know if Emerson Hancock is good. I am very confident in saying that it can be a fine number 5. And I'll tell you why. He at least has a pitch. Yeah, he's a pitcher with a pitch. All right. Now, his changeup is really sweet. It gets a ton of arm side movement on it. It's a really, really cool looking circle change. You, especially in modern baseball now, unless you're like Devin Williams or Tommy Canley, who are relief pitchers, by the way, having just the changeup is not going to get you through a lot. But it's jumping off point, you know. I'm giving him a lot of leeway here. But the sporadic pitching he had to do last year, he had to pitch at the start of the year because Brian Wu was hurt. He threw a lot in April and early May, and then when Brian Wu was back, he really didn't throw much. He had one start in June and one start in July. But I wanted to talk about those starts because he had one start in April, and it was against the Brewers. He went 3 1/3, gave up 11 hits, 8 earned runs. And that was the worst start of the year by far. But the rest of the starts that he put together for this team were pretty decent. I'm just going to read you all of them up until September. April 1st, 5 1/3, 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 1 strikeout. April 13th. Oh, April 7th was the Brewers game. April 13th, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 strikeouts. April 21st, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 strikeouts. April 26th, 6 innings, 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts. That's 3 straight quality starts to end April. Then May 1st, 3 2/3, 5 runs, only one of them earned, but 4 walks, 4 strikeouts. That was a weird one against the Braves. May 7th, 4 innings, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, 0 strikeouts. That one wasn't good. And then he didn't pitch again until June 13th, where he went 7 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 strikeout, or 1 strikeout, 2 walks. That was against the White Sox, though. July 6th was his next start. 4 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. Those are a mix of decent starts right there. If that's your number 5, I'm all right with it. And then September, he made 3 starts, and this was when Luis Castillo was out. And they were all very serviceable starts. 5 innings against the Rangers, 3 earned runs, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk. Against the Rangers again in Texas, 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 0 walks, 3 strikeouts. And then September 28th, his last start of the season, 5 1/3, 3 earned runs, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. To end the year, those are decent starts. And it wasn't like mail it in, we're out of the playoffs starts. Like, those are like, we need to win every game starts. And the Mariners won all 3 of those games, funny enough. And that, because that was when the offense was actually performing pretty well. So all I'm saying is I'm not giving up on Emerson Hancock. I think there's something there. I think if more pitchers get hurt and he has to throw like 100 plus innings this year, that is where I think things could get a little dicey. But I think he's a useful starting pitching depth option. I think at best he might be a fourth starter on a good team. At worst, maybe he's a quad A guy. But right now, I think he's fine as the number 5 for the Mariners. That's all I'll say. The only other guy I want to talk about briefly, Logan Evans. I think he's poised to make his debut this year if there is a spot open in the rotation. Doesn't look like he's going to be a relief pitcher. Doesn't mean he won't work out of the bullpen at any point in Major League Baseball this year. He certainly could on a need basis. But they tried him out in the bullpen last year after he broke out in Arkansas, and his stuff did not tick up, and he actually lost command working out of the bullpen. So losing command, you generally obviously want the stuff to tick up if you're going to do that, and it just didn't. So they scrapped that idea, back to being a full-time starter. And he is a really interesting pitcher. He reminds me a lot of Seth Lugo, just because he has not really an elite fastball or even really an elite sinker, but he has two really good breaking pitches in his slider and his curveball. And if you have two really good breaking pitches, that is a huge asset. That has been shown to work for a lot of guys. Like, Seth Lugo is a really good example of a guy with who's always really had a couple really good breaking pitches. I think his results in AA last season were really good. I think that would offer something super different out of the Mariners rotation, because he would not be the typical I'm going to fastball you in the zone to death with my elite fastball like the rest of the starting pitchers on this team. He'd be like, I'm going to throw you sinker, slider, curveball, cutter 75% of the time. And then, you know, maybe a little bit of four seam changeup after that. But that's what he's going to do with like a lower arm slot. So I think that could work. The results in AA speak for themselves. I think he will be pitching in AAA this season at some point. Definitely, I think he's the after Hancock. I think he's the next guy to step up. Maybe they give Jonathan Diaz another chance, but I'm not confident that he can do that. So Logan Evans, name to remember, name to look out for depth in the 2025 season. And that's it for the starters. Again, I'm just looking forward to watching these guys. But I talked about my concerns at the top of the show, but now on to the bullpen. And I'll say it about this bullpen. I talked last season about how this was still a really good bullpen last year. Especially, like, if you just went off ERA, which is not perfect for a bullpen, they still were 10th overall. And a lot of the other stats support that this was still a really solid pen. A lot of stress was placed atop this bullpen. Like, if they were a ship, someone didn't do the correct buoyancy math on the amount of weight that was put in the hole of this ship last season. Like I talked about with Brian Wu, they had to pick up a lot of slack with some of those shorter starts from Wu, some of those shorter starts from Hancock in the early part of the season. And then obviously Matt Brash was out for the year. Gregory Santos, their big bullpen acquisition of the offseason, pitched, what, 9 innings? He was hurt all year, and when he pitched, he was bad. Their acquisition of Jimmy Garcia at the deadline didn't work out, and he had to pitch less in crunch time in September. A lot of guys pitched and were gone, like Ryan Stanek, they ended up trading. He was meh in the pen for them. Like J.T. Chargois was good after they acquired him, but largely there was a lot of stress put on them, and there wasn't a whole lot of margin for error for them to work with. The lack of offense before August 19th really wasn't great. The bullpen is put way more under a way more powerful microscope when they're given no run leads, like tie games, 1-run leads, 2-run leads. It leads to more high leverage for guys you don't want in high leverage. That is part of the reason why I think there was a connotation that the bullpen blew so many games last year. I think, sure, they definitely gave up more leads than we've seen the past couple seasons from them last season. I just don't necessarily think a lot of the wins and losses were on them. A lot of the losses, particularly. I'm pretty bullish about this bullpen heading into the 2025 season. I think some of it is absolutely health, and some of it I'm just increasingly confident that the arms they have are good, and they're good at identifying arms. They'll miss sometimes, but I think their hits are way more important than their misses. The tough part for me at the moment is trying to project those last couple arms that'll sneak into the pen to start the year. We know Matt Brash won't be back until probably May at the earliest, it sounds like May, maybe June. It depends on how it sounds like his rehab is going really well, which is good. So maybe May is the earliest we see him. But right now, especially since I'm doing this before the position players, we will know a lot more about what this pen's going to look like next week and leading up to opening day. We know the core, but it's those last couple guys. So right now, Roster Resource has this on Fangraphs, has this bullpen as this: Andrés Muñoz, no surprises there, Colin Snyder, Gregory Santos, Trent Thornton, Taylor Saucedo, and Gabe Spire. Those are the main guys for sure. And then they have Seth Martinez and Carlos Vargas making this pen. I don't disagree with this. I think Troy Taylor, it came out last week, or not last week, a little bit late February, that he had a strained lat, which is kind of worrisome because lats are one of those, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that what Santos had last year? Like, lats are tricky in baseball. It's because lats too, you just never know how you're going to feel until you get back throwing. And so you get back throwing, it hurts still. Again, you miss another week or two, and you just keep doing that. So lats are brutal. Lats could just stretch the entire season. Like, I'm pretty confident that's what Santos had last year. So I'm a little worried about that. Otherwise, Troy Taylor, I talked about him a couple episodes ago. Love what he's got going on for this pen. So I really hope he can be healthy most of the year. It doesn't sound like he's going to start the year healthy. So I think Seth Martinez makes this bullpen out of camp. He's an interesting reclamation-y bounce back project that, I mean, the team always kind of takes one on, and every contending team kind of takes a pitcher like this on in their pen, especially now with just how dramatically you can revitalize someone's career in the bullpen with, you know, analytics and pitching development stuff and all that. So I'll talk about him a little bit more in depth later. But Carlos Vargas is, I don't know if he's good, man. He was the guy who came back. Ooh, I got to get this right. Yeah, he came back with Sebi Zavala in the Eugenio Suarez trade. I almost thought he came back in the Seawald trade, but that was not Vargas. I don't think. Wait, hold on. Just paused. Had to see if I was correct. I was correct. They've made two emotionally backbreaking trades with the Diamondbacks past couple of years, so almost got my wires crossed. He was intriguing as just one of those guys who throws absolute gas, doesn't know where it's going. He didn't pitch very well in AAA, and even factoring in both, like, throwing, I think, some ABS in there, which ticks up the walk rates in AAA, where they tested it out, and then also just pitching in the PCL is automatically going to affect the batted balls and the luck that happens. Even with that, he really did not pitch as well in AAA as I wanted him to, as anyone else wanted him to. Clearly, he didn't pitch very well as like the org wanted him to, because I think he would have pitched last year in the majors if he was any good last year. So him being there, they mark him as the long man out of this pen, which I'm skeptical of that. I think it should go to Eduardo Bizzardo. I'm a big Bizzardo head for almost no reasons other than I just like him. But that is the bullpen they have on Fangraphs Roster Resource. So there's obviously, I mean, it's a bullpen in 2025. In baseball, there will be a lot of guys to throw innings out of this pen. There will be injuries. There will be random implosions that relievers just have year over year. That's just how this goes. But I'm pretty damn confident in the group that they have going into the season and some of the depth that they've got. Similar to the starting rotation, I mean, let's just get the easy one out of the way. Andrés Muñoz. Ugh. God. He's just tremendous. He could do the same thing he did last year. There was some injury scare early in the season for him. But once he was pitching, he still logged 59 to third innings. They really worked him heavily, even though he wasn't healthy the whole year. 22 saves, 2.12 ERA, almost a 40% whiff rate, which is like 15%, I think, above league average. 33% strikeout rate. Averaged almost sat 99 on his fastball. Just insane. They have, at full health, I think he's definitely has the ability to be a top five closer in the game. I think right now he's one of the best relief pitchers. The Mariners don't really do full on closer. I mean, they will, which I like. they're not like resigned to only using Munoz in save situations in the ninth inning. They will use him in the eighth to get out of jams, and they're confident in their other pitchers sometimes to finish games out. It's not necessarily closer by committee. When Matt Brash comes back, I think it's a little bit more they're okay with Brash closing games. But with Brash out, I think he'll be more of a traditional closer, but still will definitely be a firefighter, you know, a bombero to come in and the eighth inning to put out a jam. The only other thing I want to talk about with Munoz, again, like Logan Gilbert, I don't have a whole lot else to say about how he can improve. He's just phenomenal to watch. Electric. His slider is insane. The amount of bite to his slider is stupid. And then he has, and I talked about it last week, this new kick changeup thing, which really looks like a splitter, but it's a changeup. It looks like the shape and stuff-wise, like an 80 grade stuff pitch. Like, it looks stupid good. Can he command it? Can he and Cal and the other catchers figure out how to use it most effectively off of his fastball slider that he has and his sinker? We'll see. I don't know how much he's going to throw it. There's like almost no indication of how much he's going to throw it. Guys do this in spring training all the time. And then to varying degrees of success or usage in the season with these new pitches, like, we just don't know until it happens. But it looks tantalizing, that pitch. And if he can harness it and use it effectively, like, that catapults him into like winning reliever of the year and having truly, truly, truly an elite season out of the pen, which he's been pretty damn elite for three straight years now. So it's not, it wouldn't be anything out of the ordinary, but that's just a crazy pitch that he's added. So that's Andrés Muñoz. He'll be the anchor. And then next guy I'm going to talk about is Trent Thornton. Trent Thornton, I think, flies under the radar in this pen. He threw in 71 games last season. He made 71 appearances and 72 and a third innings. The stats are really solid for that amount of work from a bullpen guy. 3.61 ERA. Had a 3.2 Sierra to go along with a 3.47 FIP, which I really enjoy. Guy is a sweeper slider guy. He's one I talked about earlier with having two good breaking pitches, a sweeper and a slider. He throws them the most, and they're very effective. And he's a very good, he doesn't give up hard contact much at all. Like, when he gives up batted balls, it's really not very much hard contact. He's not a flamethrower. Like, he sits like 95-ish on his fastball, can get it up to 97. But just a really effective pitcher who clearly they like to use a lot. Gets really good spin rates on his breaking pitches. Strikes out guys at a good clip, 26%. That's really solid. Doesn't walk a whole lot of guys. Just really is kind of I'm going to spin my shit in the zone, and you're going to have to try to square it up. And then he aims at the center. When it misses, he gets a lot of chase out of the zone. That leads to some of that weak contact that I talked about. I think really underrated pitcher for what he meant to the team last year. Again, he pitched 72 and a third innings with a year where Matt Brash was out and Gregory Santos only threw 9 innings. They needed those innings from him, and he was pretty damn effective. I think the only thing is they probably used him in high leverage more than they wanted to because of those injuries. So when Matt Brash comes back, maybe Trent Thornton feels like a really, really good middle relief option and more of a bulk guy coming out of the pen. So hopefully he can stay healthy. It's a lot of miles on a relief pitcher, but I really like Trent Thornton. I think he gets some hate from the fan base, but I think he's just a really effective pitcher and offers something a little different than the rest of this pen. That's one thing, too, I really like about this bullpen and how it's set up. Is there's a lot of different looks. There's a couple lefties who throw drastically differently. You have your kind of typical flamethrower, Munoz, crazy fastball slider combo. Trent Thornton's your breaking ball spin guy. Like, Colin Snyder's kind of like just an anomaly of why is this guy so good. Santos is like power sinker velocity dude. And then you have just some interesting young guys to come up and show their stuff. But that core of the pen, there's a lot of different looks, which is part of why I really like it. So Trent Thornton, looking forward to him staying a little bit more out of high leverage this year, but I hope he can stay healthy and still just be a go-to option in the middle innings for this team this year. So moving on to the absolute bullpen lab success of the year last year, Colin Snyder. He got teased a little bit early on in the year. It was he pitched early in the year and then didn't pitch again. He pitched in April three times and then didn't pitch again until June. Pitched twice at the start of June, looked really solid. Didn't get to pitch again until the end of June, but then June 28th is when he made his appearance, and that is what then cemented him being in the the bullpen for the rest of the year as one of the best guys in this pen. He ended the season with 41.2 innings, 41 and two-thirds, a 1.94 ERA for him. The peripherals are 3.41 FIP and a 3.22 Sierra. So obviously, he definitely got a little lucky with some of his bad ball outcomes last year. I mean, that's clear. But his BABIP that he gave up was basically, it was 298. It was almost 300, which indicates to me that FIP is lying to us, and Colin Snyder is actually the best relief pitcher in baseball. No, I'm just kidding. But he struck out a lot of guys last year, damn near 28%. And you look at his stuff, you look at, like, he averages 94 on his fastball. Sure. Like, that's not particularly elite for a relief pitcher. He throws a sweeper off that fastball and a cutter. Both of those just, or all three of those pitches, just used them really effectively. I think they squeezed every ounce of effectiveness as they could out of him last year. And it was just so impressive that they managed to do that, and he managed to do that. But he came over from the Royals with pretty awful stats, if we're being honest. Like, really not great. But he came over with really good-looking spin and shape on his fastball. They made a little tweak to how he comes at the zone. He raised his arm angle a little bit with the Mariners. And then that fastball was so good, despite just looking pedestrian. But the shape of it is really good. Comes in a little funky to hitters. And it just works really well. And then you got that sweeper moving pretty damn well horizontally. Yeah, it's just a really weird fastball. Like, you look at it, and it doesn't move that much. It just kind of comes in, but he locates it really well, and it just works. You know, it just works. And I don't know what he's going to do this season. Those peripherals tell me, obviously, there's regression to the mean coming for him. I don't think he's going to put up a 1.94 ERA, but I do think, like Thornton, he's going to be a solid guy to turn to in middle relief for this team. So, what a crazy year that he had. It was insane. Gregory Santos is just the wild card of this pen this year. He pitched 7 1/3 innings last year, was just bad in those innings. Just really not good. Just didn't look great. Clearly not healthy. His upside is very intriguing. Power sinker guy with a potentially amazing slider to go along with it that he throws really hard. Like, he can throw his sinker 100 miles an hour. He showed it in 2023 with the White Sox. And obviously, when he was acquired, there's a reason he was acquired. Like, his slider sinker is just special. And his raw ability is really special if he's healthy. And he just needs to be healthy. And I'm pretty confident the Mariners can get a lot out of him. And he can be a setup guy for Andrés Muñoz. And then when Matt Brash comes back, that's a potential three-headed monster to face. but we just got to see it first. We just didn't see it at all last season. So I don't even have much to say besides he just needs to be healthy. He hasn't pitched very much in spring training. So I'm assuming he's going to start the year healthy and fine. They appear to be slow playing him a little bit in spring. I haven't heard that he's not fine. So I think he's going to be really good this year. I think this is ideally the year where he's healthy and great. So we'll see. I don't have much else to say about him besides he needs to stay healthy. I think if he's healthy, he's going to be really good. And then the two lefties, Gabe Spire and Taylor Saucedo. Gabe Spire, hopefully back fully healthy all year this year. A guy that was so good. So good for the Mariners in 2022 and 2023. Just combining those years, he was just great. And then last season, hurt. And when he was pitching, didn't look great. Similar, like he looked like, erratic. His stuff looked fine. A lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts in his 23 and two-thirds innings this season. They need him back. They need him back being the main lefty to turn to out of this pen. Just fastball, sinker, slider, fairly basic mix. Pretty high arm angle. Like, he doesn't throw particularly hard, but can locate his pitch as well. Can pitch really well against left-handed batters. I think they need that offering this season out of the pen, especially missing him and Saucedo for some time last season. They were definitely lacking that in the bullpen. Another just kind of reclamation success story for this team, and was a pretty key cog in the pen in 2023, threw a lot of innings. Really good at limiting hard contact, struck a lot of guys out with his delivery and just the way he mixes his pitches. Just had a really good year out of the pen. A lot of whiff. Gets a lot of chase out of the zone. I think that's just by nature of how he pitches and where he locates and just how he attacks guys. I think he can still be really good. He was just so hurt all of last season. So it's really more about getting back to what he did in 2022 and 2023 with this team. It's really all that it's about. Keep saying 2022 like he was on the team. He wasn't. I don't know why I was talking like he was on the team in 2022. He wasn't, but he was really good in a short amount of innings that year for the Royals. The Mariners claimed him and then was very key in 2023. And he just needs to get back to that. It was such a clear waiver claim that the Mariners were like, yeah, we can see something with this guy. 2023 was a validation of that. 2025 for him needs to be big. Need to be a big year for the Gabriel Spire world of this bullpen. They need him and Taylor Saucedo to be those core lefties out of the pen. And Saucedo, just a funky guy. I think every great bullpen in baseball needs a certain amount of funk. And Taylor Saucedo brings that funk in pitching and in personality. The guy does not strike very many people out. He'll get strikeouts. He hovers right around league average for strikeouts, but for a reliever, 23% is you know, that's whatever. It's his just ability to limit hard contact that's pretty sensational. Fangraphs has a stat that's like hard contact percentage, so it's different than hard hit percentage. It's just all of the batted balls that a guy gives up, how much of them are classified as hard hit, whether they be outs or hits. So over 95 miles an hour, and league average is around 32%. Saucedo last season in his 38 and two-thirds innings had a 16.7% hard contact percentage. That goes along with a really good, almost half of his batted balls he gives up for ground balls. So this is a guy, and his fastball is not very, he throws it pretty slow, but he's so funky, and it's a sinker, and he gets so many ground balls, so much weak contact. You need a guy like this in the bullpen. You need a guy that's like going to get you soft contact to let your fielders go to work. And I think he suffered from the fielding being a little bit worse and more inconsistent last season. He ends up with a 3.49 ERA. And he allowed a lot of base runners. But I think also if, Like, if Ryan Bliss is the second baseman and is good, JP is back to being just a good shortstop. Third base is really just a huge question mark. But if the infield defense is good, that will make a guy like Saucedo better. That's a mutually beneficial relationship, for especially for a reliever like him. Again, need him inspire to be the funky, fun little southpaws in this pen and get shit done. And then, who else do I want to talk about? Who else? Troy Taylor. I talked about him quite a bit in a recent podcast. Just came up immediately as a guy who looked like a really solid reliever. We'll see when he actually pitches with that lat strain, but came up and in his short time in September, 19 and a third innings, 31% strikeout rate, which was really good. Sat 97 on the fastball. Just looks like a really solid reliever that they have in that he's been in the organization for a few years now. I think he can be a very valuable piece in this pen if he's healthy. And then a guy who I like, who I really, really like a lot, that I talked about earlier, Edward Bazzardo. He ended up with 27 and two-thirds innings last year, most of them coming later in the year in September. A lot of them low-leverage situations, but he was damn good in those situations, okay? He had a 4.88 ERA. That doesn't sound good at all, but his FIP was 2.7 and his Sierra was 2.81, and that's really good. And so that tells me 4.88 ERA, what the hell was the defense doing? He gets a lot of ground balls. He's also a very ground ball reliant guy. He has a very good breaking ball slider. He throws a lot, and a fastball sinker that are also fairly effective. And he has a splitter. I don't know if he's working on anything special going into 2025, but I really like him. He has more of an overhand delivery, which is why he just gets a lot of ground balls on that slider. And, you know, there's some guys that you just like. And I just like him. I threw some stats at you there, but sometimes you just like a guy. And going into last season, I think I said Bazzardo is going to be an important piece in the pen. Maybe I was a year too early on him. I think this year could be the Bazzardo year where he's a very solid contributor all year in this bullpen. I think this could be the year. Okay? I'm saying it. It could be. I don't know what it's going to be. I like him. It's a fun breaking ball. Again, another guy that would really benefit from the defense in the infield, particularly being great again. So we'll see. We'll see. But that's kind of it for the main guys I want to discuss out of the pen. And then Seth Martinez. I lied. Seth Martinez. The low-key newcomer to the pen that not a lot of casual fans will know who that is when the year starts. He has been with the Astros since he's made his professional debut. I don't think he was drafted with the Astros, but that doesn't really matter. He had a really, really good 2022 with them in the pen. Looked great. Had a really awful 2023. And then his 2024 was weird. It was just weird. He split time from AAA to the majors. He threw a lot in the major leagues, but and with some solid statistics, like not blowing you out of the water, but he also was phenomenal in the appearances he made in AAA last year. The Astros didn't feel like it was that he was needed anymore on the team. I think they DFA'd him. He was claimed by the Diamondbacks in this offseason, and then he was recently DFA'd by the Diamondbacks in February, which is when the Mariners claimed him. No, he was claimed by the Marlins first. And then the Marlins DFA'd him because they acquired Brett DeGuire, is that real? I get his name wrong every freaking time. Former Mariner, fun fact. And then early this month, he was claimed by the Mariners. And then there's been plenty of chatter of like, it sounds like he's going to break camp with the Mariners. And it's a good team to end up on if you want to try to get your bullpen career back on track. I mean, again, it wasn't terrible numbers from last year. The peripherals were not very good. But I think the Mariners acquired him because they think they can do something here with his fastball. He has elite extension, and he is a sidearmer, a full sidearmer. He is evolved his career to this point to be just a full-on sidearm guy. And I think the Mariners just think they can do something here with his delivery and the fact that he has been a really solid contributor and a good bullpen for the Astros in 2022. I think they see that and are probably like, yeah, there's reason to believe. We've seen him do it once. Why can't he do it again? His fastball is really interesting. It's not particularly elite at all. It's quite slow. I'd say, if anything, he'd be kind of a Paul Sewald archetype. Sidearm, kind of a slow fastball, but comes out at a funky little angle. He's 30. He hasn't really had a amazing career up until this point. There have been some highs, there have been some lows. He didn't really give up a lot of hard contact last year. But he struck out a career low amount of guys. Like, it was real bad. So I don't know. I don't have a perfect idea of what he's going to be this season, but I do have confidence that maybe the Mariners can turn it around. But again, I think he could be a late April DFA option if it really doesn't pan out, because I think the Mariners have better options available. Who else could we see in this pen this year? Cody Bolton. We saw him a little bit last year. He's still on the team. Shintaro Fujinami is maybe the most interesting arm that's going to be in AAA this season unless they release him. He's just he's electric, has no idea where it's going to go. Hagen Danner, they got this offseason, they picked him up. 37-year-old Neftali Feliz, is he going to remain in AAA and pitch for the Mariners in 2025? Who knows? Casey Lugamina, the big bean, the legume himself, he looks like Paul Sewald. He looks like a full-on Paul Sewald regen for this team. If Seth Martinez doesn't fill that role, they got the bean in AAA, Lugamina, to fill the role for him. Point is, a lot of guys are probably going to pitch in the pen this year, but all those guys I talked at length about more are the core. God, I really am hoping that Matt Brash comes back and is looking like himself and comes back soon but healthy. But I'm going to call it. I could keep going and talking about the rest of the AAA bullpen, but I'm not going to do that. So we pray for Matt Brash to be back healthy. This was the pitching preview for the 2025 Seattle Mariners. The position player preview is coming soon. I'm looking forward greatly to watching all of these pitchers again pitch for the Seattle Mariners. And the biggest asset they have, T-Mobile Park, still going to be very, very lucrative for pitching there. If you really want to boost your numbers, come pitch in Seattle half the time. Greatly recommended. But we'll see what this bullpen ends up doing. I'm really quite, as I said, I'm quite bullish on how good this pen might be this season. I really hope that doesn't come back to bite me in the ass. And then every single starter, God, I just greatly enjoy all of them. And really looking forward to watching them and talking about them along with you, the listener, this season. So thanks for listening this far if you did. This will probably be a similar link to the position players one, just letting you know, it's a heads up. But thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week. Look out for the position player pod, and we're very close. Can you smell opening day? I can smell it. But we're getting there. Goodbye.